Good evening and welcome to the InfoWars Nightly News. I'm your host, Rob Dew, and today's date is September 21st, 2012, which is a Friday. And we're about to have an amazing show. Strap yourselves in.
Tonight, two very special InfoWars Nightly News reports. Up first, Rob Dew goes in depth on how the environmentalist death cult is brainwashing your kids into hating themselves. Then, as Agenda 21 slams into Texas, greedy developers set to pad their pockets, plundering an Austin treasure. Plus, a mother and daughter exercise their Second Amendment rights by using a pink gun to fight crime. All that and more up next on the InfoWars Nightly News.
We got two big special reports. One of them, Alex, literally sprung on me just a couple hours ago. We got an amazing interview with a libertarian running for Congress in Texas, taking over Lloyd Doggett's spot, hopefully. And Ja'Kari Jackson's got some interesting Second Amendment news. But first, we move to the dung beetle. Janet Napolitano, executive order on cybersecurity is close to completion, and this is out of the Hill newspaper. Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano on Wednesday said the cybersecurity executive order that the White House is drafting is close to completion. Well, you guys remember how Barack Obama said several times, we're going to try to figure out how to do things without Congress's help. If they don't want to do it, I'm going to do it. In fact, I think it was last night on Dan Bedondi's piece on security is slavery that he put that in there. And or was it Ja'Kari's? I think it was Ja'Kari's Judge Dredd piece. That's what it was. We got so many special reports coming out. We got so many great reporters working out. I can hardly keep track of it. And that's why I've hardly been doing the news. I've been trying to get these people in front of the camera, getting them looking good and making it happen. So moving on with this piece of trash here. At the Senate Homeland Security and Government Affairs Committee hearing, Napolitano said the executive order is still being drafted in the interagency process. That means they're figuring out how to really screw everybody out there. And is close to completion depending on a few issues that need to be resolved at the highest levels. Yeah, what the highest levels are, that's what corporations will be able to contact Department of Homeland Security and say, this person's posting something bad and I think it's bad and go after them and shut their website down. And they've already started doing it. They've already been shutting down websites claiming copyright infringement and they're just going to keep on doing it. And the web is supposed to be a place where information is free and transferred and we all get to use it for the betterment of society. I mean, what else is it there for? Oh, maybe it's there for Google and Facebook to spy on you and sell your information to large corporations so they could just continue the process of siphoning the money out of your pocket. One more quote here in this article. The White House began to explore an executive order last month after Senate Republicans blocked it. That was a Joe Lieberman article. Basically, they were going to go after, or Joe Lieberman bill, they're basically going to go after anybody who was posting anything, which I said before. Napolitano again, urge Congress to enact comprehensive cybersecurity legislation, arguing the White House cannot completely address the threat on its own. An order from the President's office can't offer liability protections to companies which protect them from legal action if they're hit by a cyber attack. And what does all this mean? Well, we know if the government's getting into it, it's going to be bad. We're not looking forward to it. So moving on, we now got a real creepy story, and this is out of Fox 31 in Denver, Colorado. Stand Up for Kids founder arrested for sexual assault on child. So once again, we have one of the heads of these charities and do-gooder organizations for children has been found to be a pedophile, essentially, or at least is an alleged pedophile at this point. He's been arrested for sexual assault. So we're going to say he's an alleged pedophile at this point. I don't want to point any fingers, but he's looking pretty smug in that photo. And it's always interesting how it's always the heads of these organizations that are supposed to care for the children that we find they prey on the children. Just look at Jerry Sandusky. We covered that one earlier in the week. And he was a founder of a nonprofit group that worked with homeless children in 37 cities over two decades. And it's the homeless children without parents to talk to or without people to run to, those kids that are not protected that always end up being the victims and stuff like this because they're preyed upon by predators. People like this are predators and they look for easy prey. That's why they go after these kids. The Aurora the Police Department confirmed that Tuesday Richard Coca Sr., who founded Stand Up for Kids in 1990, was taken into custody on September 15th after an investigation that began on August 29th. Authorities said over that period of time they built a case that alleges Coca was committing felony sexual assault on a child he was supervising in Aurora. And, of course, it's a position of trust. And they did give him a high bond, $250,000. He's not going to get out of there soon. And it's just totally disgusting. And we're going to have more on how the elites and these people in power positions prey on your children. But this time it's more in so that they feel so bad that they want to end up, you know, committing suicide or getting to that thing that they're bad for the earth. And we're going to go into that a little bit later. Moving on to some science news. Warp drive may be more realistic than thought. And basically, scientists have worked it out. A ring-shaped warp drive device could transport a football-shaped starship to effective speeds faster than light. And this is out of Wired magazine. So NASA scientists now think that they can make warp drive happen. A warp drive would work by warping the space-time around any spaceship, which physicist Miguel Acubert showed was theoretically possible in 1994, albeit way beyond the current technical capabilities of humanity. However, such Acubert drive was assumed to require more energy equivalent to the mass energy of the whole planet of Jupiter that could ever possibly supply, rendering impossible to build. So, you need the amount of energy or the same size as the mass of Jupiter in order to attain warp drive. Maybe someday we will get there. We won't get there if all the bees die, because I think it was Albert Einstein said, once the bees go away, we're not too far behind. And now we know, mystery of the disappearing bees solved. And it's like what we said all along, most likely something man-made. We were speculating either it's going to be the cell phone towers or pesticides. Well, it turns out it looks like pesticides is the problem. Thousands of scientific sleuths have been on this case for 15 years trying to determine why our honeybees are disappearing, which is the biggest general threat to our food supply. Recently, the evidence was inconclusive for colony collapse disorder, but now they think they have a culprit. And it looks like, and interestingly enough, a chemical produced by the German chemical giant Bayer, they create a pesticide that is sprayed on acres of corn, wheat, and cotton seeds. And that seems to be the big problem. It goes in, they're called neonics. And they're absorbed by the plant's vascular system, contaminate the pollen and the nectar, and the bees encounter that on their rounds, and then it messes up their central nervous system. And it basically destroys their homing abilities. So they don't return to the hive with the food. The hive dies, colony collapses, and we're left with less bees than we had before. And scientists have been sounding the alarm here for a long time with this colony collapse disorder. So hopefully people will get their heads out of their ears and figure this out. We'll stop spraying pesticides on every little thing we can touch and maybe go to more organic forms of growing. Honeybees have been likened to the canaries in the coal mine. They're vanishing as nature's way of telling us that conditions have deteriorated in the world around us. Bees won't survive for long if we don't change our commercial breeding practices and remove deadly toxins from the environment. A massive pollinator die-off would imperil the world's food supplies and devastate ecosystems that depend on them. The loss of these creatures might rival climate change and its impact on life on Earth. Well, okay, maybe climate change. You know, the climate does change all along. They didn't say man-made climate change, so I'm more inclined to believe in that. But I tell you, we definitely do have to be looking out for these honeybees. I see them all the time when I'm out, and they don't look good. They look very sick. Now I want to go from the bees dying to our children who are being baptized in this new earth-first death cult. Basically, we have these upper-crust-level educators, thinkers, scientists, earth worshippers who think humans are bad. And their mission, instead of just doing away with themselves, and if humans are such a bad problem, go on off yourself. No, they want to tell us that we're bad for the earth and we basically need to die. They don't come out and say it like that every time, though. They don't come out and say you need to die. They like to approach it from this educational standpoint, wearing a blazer with the elbow pads, just talking in nice, gentle terms, and how it's overpopulation and we've developed equations. So we're going to get into that. And there it is, Time Magazine, How to Die. Wow, look at that. Guys are on the ball. So it's all about training the young people to hate themselves and to hate life and to hate technology and to hate success. And it's to get you in that mindset of wanting to be a slave. And we've got a great example of that that we're going to come up with and show you in a second. But first, I want to go to a clip of Al Gore. And this is from 2009, where he was talking to the kids, getting them prepared to become good little green police. Let's go to that clip.
There are some things about our world that you know that older people don't know.
He goes on to say and equate that our generation told our parents that it was wrong to have segregation, which it is. And what he's trying to do later, because this is a climate change conference, he's trying to equate racism with this fake climate change agenda he's pushing. And that because you're smart and we're giving you privileged information on the inside, that now you know stuff your parents don't know. And we're going to see more of this. You need to tell your parents to stop driving, to change their light bulbs, to change their toilets. All this stuff happens, and it slowly creeps through. Well, back in 2008, and there was a TV network that told kids how long their carbon footprint should be to allow them to live. There's that full screen right there, and it was a video game, and it's got a little piggy on it, and it says, find out when you should die, and this is a little game for kids. So it goes on to say, how big of a greenhouse pig are you? Click on the question numbers across the top and select your answer for each one. The Australian average answer is indicated. With each answer, see how your CO2 production compares to the average Aussie greenhouse pig and the environmentally sustainable green pig. And when you're done, click on the skull and crossbones to find out what age you should die so you don't use more than your fair share of Earth's resources. So they're indoctrinating the little kids into this mindset of, oh, if you have a pool or if you have a big car, you're a greenhouse pig and therefore you should die. Well, now let's move into this week. Urian Masson wrote an article titled, UC Professor Eyes Permanent Sterilant to Cull U.S. Population. And it goes on to talk about this University of California Riverside professor, Richard Cardullo, was talking about Gossypol and the derivative used of it being a sterilant and the World Health Organization and all this other stuff. But what was interesting, and I watched not all the video. I skipped the first part of the question and answer. I watched a little bit of it. Basically, he got into science. He was into physics. And then he went to Harvard, one of these upper crust schools. And there he learned that humans were bad. And he started studying basically the effects of reproduction and population. And so his job now is to go around and tell kids that the earth is overpopulated and that steps need to be taken. And he puts it in terms that the kids can understand that if their generation is going to be part of the solution, then they need to just stop having children and start practicing birth control and, hell, maybe even get sterilized. So we're going to go to a few clips that I cut out of this over-hour presentation, and we're going to analyze each one. Each one's maybe about 20 seconds long. First one, he's going to talk about Thomas Malthus. And if you've listened to Tarpley, you've heard the term Malthusian. Well, this is where it comes from. Here's that clip.
Robert Malthus was a very famous British economist and clergyman. And he argued that the population would inevitably increase faster than the food supply unless it's kept in check by things like famine, disease, and war. His ideas actually gained a lot of support. And he actually wanted to use his arguments to limit food supplies. So that, you know, we could control populations.
Control populations. That's what it's all about. It's just, you know, we're going to limit the food supply so people starve. And that's how we're going to control population. Well, let's go to some quotes from Malthus. This first one's about the plague. Instead of recommending cleanliness to the poor, we should encourage contrary habits. In our towns, we should make the streets narrower, crowd more people into the houses, and court the return of the plague. In the country, we should build our villages near stagnant pools, and particularly encourage settlement in all marshy and unwholesome situations. There's Sir Thomas Malthus. That's what he thinks of humanity. He's a real smart man. And by the way, the people he influenced were people like Charles Darwin and others like that, basically the fathers, the grandfathers of the eugenics movement. Here's another quote from Malthus. All children who are born beyond what would be required to keep up the population to a desired level must necessarily perish, unless room can be made for them by death of a grown person. We should facilitate instead of foolishly and vainly endeavoring to impede the operations of nature and producing this morality. That was from his essays on the principles of population. Here's another one from Malthus. The power of population is indefinitely greater than the power in the earth to produce sustenance for man. Well, since Malthus's time, we've proven that we could make our agricultural standards better, use irrigation techniques, use retention ponds, all kind of things. They grow crops out in Egypt now. And you know how they do it? They put black plastic down and they water them underneath the black plastic. And that keeps it basically humid underneath there. How do I know this? Well, one of my relatives is a farmer who went from Michigan all the way to Egypt to learn how they farm in the desert. And now he's grown his crops to greater levels. And so we have the technology, and any time the human race has come up to a problem, we can find ways around it. Usually we don't. We resort to war. But there's a lot of great things that we have created. And when pushed in the right directions, we can make these things happen for the betterment of man. Now let's move on. He also introduces the young middle schoolers to Paul and Ann Ehrlich. Let's see what he has to say about them.
These are very famous people, especially in the 1970s. Paul and Ann Ehrlich are scientists and faculty members at Stanford University, and they were interested in the effect of populations on the environment. So they came up with a very simple relationship, which is I equals PAT. It's called the IPAT formula. And simply what this says is that the environmental impact, okay, is going to be affected by, first of all, the population size, second of all, by the affluence. So for instance, if you want to minimize environmental impact, perhaps you should consider lowering your standard of living, for instance.
Oh. You see, if we all live in slums, then we can have more people. But that's the only way we could have more people in this world, is if we all live in 16 by 16 apartments. Oh, remember that report Melissa Melton did? That's right. That's what they're trying in New York. 16 by 16 square apartments where you can live like a prisoner. And if you do that, well, then we can have a few more people. But if you don't, then your affluence is too high, and you're a greenhouse piggy, and you must be killed and find out when you should die. So this all starts when they're young. It starts with coloring books about polar bears and about dolphins and penguins and how they're all endangered from evil man. And yes, there is a lot of pollution going on in the world. But guess what? It's not me doing it. It's not you doing it. It's these giant corporations that are beholden to no one. Like, didn't we just cover Bayer spraying chemicals that are killing the bees? Oh, wait, I'm not spraying the chemicals unless I use them myself and I buy them. So I'm actually am doing my part to kill the bees and in a sick way. But I really don't. I don't use anything. When I have ants or anything like that in my yard, I use hot water or boric acid, which is benign. But it's neither here nor there. We have more clips to go through. This guy is not done. I mean, he brainwashed these kids hardcore for an hour. Let's look at some Paul Ehrlich quotes. When an area overpopulated, when is an area overpopulated? When its population can't be maintained without rapidly depleting non-renewable resources. By this standard, the entire planet and virtually every nation is already vastly overpopulated. Wow. Even though there's enough room in Texas to give everybody an acre of land in the entire world and live on it. So how are we overpopulated? Oh, well, Paul doesn't want to answer that. He was too busy writing books in the 70s about population booms and how we were going to have these massive catastrophes. And it seems like those catastrophes do end up happening, but only after they're engineered, only after control of resources is instituted, usually by these giant NGOs, World Health Organization, Rockefeller Foundation funded groups come in and want to control things. And that's when you have famines. That's when you have genocides. Let's go to another Ehrlich quote. The development of a long-term sterilization capsule that could be implanted under the skin and removed when pregnancy is desired opens additional possibilities for coercive fertility control. The capsule could be implanted at puberty and might be removable with official permission for a limited number of births. And he wrote that along with John Holdren in Echo Science. And if you're a member of PrisonPlanet.tv, you can go to an interview we did with Tarpley in our special report section, and it basically covers Echo Science from front to back, mainly centers around Holdren because he was the science czar, but both Paul and Ann Ehrlich helped write the book. So these people are basically peas in a pod. Got one more Ehrlich quote. A cancer is an uncontrolled multiplication of cells. The population explosion is an uncontrolled multiplication of people. We must shift our efforts from the treatment of the symptom to the cutting out of the cancer. The operation will demand many apparently brutal and heartless decisions. That's Paul Ehrlich in The Population Bomb. It's a book he wrote in the 70s talking about overpopulation then when we had about 4.5 to 5 billion people. Well, now we have 7. But actually, the increase of population is slowing down, and plenty of people have said that it's going to peak at about 9 billion and then start going down. Now, there is a problem with this. There is a problem with the population going down, because what that means is there's less young people to take care of the old people, and then you have a crisis there, which we're already seeing now, because there's a lot more baby boomers than there are people my age, and the people in the generation behind me. A lot more baby boomers, and they're going to take a lot of resources to care for, and which we could come up with problems for, but instead we're just going to run around and talk about how bad it is to get old or be young or to have children and to get people into this Hunger Games mentality. Let's move on. We got a lot more clips to go through with Professor Cardullo. Let's see what else he has to say. Here's the next clip.
We wanted to decrease our population. Okay, so let's decrease our impact on the environment. If we simply decreased the consumption of environmental resources by 5%, so you go home tonight and you tell your parents, "What if we cut down our gasoline consumption just 5%?" In the next few years. Can we do that?
Yeah. See, remember Al Gore? There's things that you know that your parents don't know. That's right. If we could just get our kids to start telling us what to do and running our lives, everything would be great. And that would solve all our problems because we've got the kids into this environmental fanaticism. Let's go on to the next clip.
So you can do a lot with these two, but ultimately the argument is we've got to do something about population as well. What about the United States? We're very affluent. You've seen many examples of that. The Earth at nighttime should have convinced you of that. We currently have a population of 313 million people. Okay? If we want to take the population down to 150 million, okay, all it would require over the next 100 years is to lower that birth rate. Okay?
So he's not saying go out and kill people. He's just saying, you know, lower the birth rate, which what they talk about in eco-science is through sterilization and forced abortion and contraceptive use against your will, anything basically to keep people from breeding. So, you know, he's proposing in order to not harm the environment to cut our birth rate down in half, and that would thereby bring us to about 150 million people instead of 320 or 30 million people, where we're at. Very dangerous ideas indeed, but he's planting these seeds into these young minds, and these kids are going to go around and regurgitate this later, and they're going to think this is true. And then they're not going to want to have families, but that'll be okay. It's for the earth. And then the only people that are having kids are people like Mr. Cardullo who are out there. They're going to have kids. Ted Turner has 5 kids. Oh, but they're all grown now, so it's different. You know, we had to create these rules now, because now we see the problems. Let's go to the next clip.
That means your generation and the next generation, if they're committed to doing this, it would mean having family sizes that on the average are 1.5 children per family. Someone have 2, someone have 1, about 50-50. That would mean we could decrease our population by about half and hopefully maintain our standard of living. That's what that means.
So we have to get rid of half the population in order to keep our standard of living, according to some crazy people who in the 70s wrote we were already at a population crisis. What happened 30, 40 years later? We're still here there is no population crisis. The crisis is with these people going around brainwashing our young children. But did you see how he's doing it? It's going to be up to you guys out there. You're going to be your problem. It's not talking about the debt or the endless wars that we're fighting. No. It's all about the population. That's the only problem. Let's go to the next clip.
Now, if we want to decrease the population, we can do it a number of different ways. I'm going to show you the thing that affects populations more than anything, and it's something I've already shown you one picture of. It's those. Okay? Sperm is a vector which ultimately leads to, and so do eggs, lead to increased population.
There you go. So how do we attack population? We attack it at the source. We go after the men. We go after the young women. We make them infertile. And he goes on to talk about cottonseed oil, which they figured out in China was a natural sterilant. People cooked with cottonseed oil. They didn't have as many kids. And so they basically stuck the World Health Organization and a bunch of Rockefeller-funded groups. We actually covered this in a couple of Yuri and Masson articles, how they were in the 60s and 70s funding experiments and working with Gossypol, also known as cottonseed oil, to create male infertility pills. The problem is if you take more than 10 times the recommended dose for infertility, you die. Well, I guess that's another way to end the population. Let's go to this last clip.
So many scientists want to know, are there ways, are there new ways that we can control population or fertility rates by targeting specific cells, sperm or eggs, okay, so that individuals can make the decision to keep those rates low?
There it is. And it's all done in a nice, calm, simpering way. They put it in the textbooks. They put it in the TV shows. They put it in your Happy Meals. Anywhere they can put the information to make kids feel bad about themselves, they put it out there. And then we have back in March an Anthony Gucciardi article. A medical journalist calls for afterbirth abortion, says infants aren't people. And very interesting article there, saying that newborn babies simply do not have a moral right to life. And it talks about a eugenics program where 60,000 people were forcibly sterilized in 1929 by the U.S. government. So essentially, these people, starting with Malthus, have started creating this mindset that humans are bad and there's too many humans and we need to get rid of them. And they do this by brainwashing our children because they know they're not going to get older people, because older people have experienced life. And the brainwashing wasn't there when I was a kid. There was stuff about recycling, and that was the start of it, an Earth Day. And it slowly creeps. Now it's light bulbs. Now it's too much gasoline. Now it's we have to take electric cars that our government subsidizes or use solar, which I'm all for. I'm all for putting research into stuff like that instead of killing. You know, if we could take the money away from killing people, killing brown people and dirt farmers in Afghanistan, and putting it towards solar research, we could be powering everything. But we don't want to do that. We're more interested in culling the population, controlling resources, and dumbing people down. That seems to be our industrial efforts. So there was my, I don't know, somewhat veiled attempt to get you people out there to recognize that this is going on and we need to stop. We need to combat this mind control with positivity and love and let kids know that we need more kids, more healthy kids, more unvaccinated kids, more kids who aren't eating GMOs, more kids who aren't sitting in front of the television, more kids who are playing. That's what we need to make a better Earth. We don't need less people. More people is what's going to make it better, because many hands make light work, as they say. And with that, we're going to go to Jakari Jackson for a few more stories. I'll be back after the break with a quick update on the Barton Springs situation. This was mandated by Alex Jones. He said, you must go on and talk about this. Another form of local tyranny where they lie and don't tell you what they're going to do, and then all of a sudden they spring up with this multi-million dollar plan to basically hack up one of our little local treasures. So,
thanks, Rob. This is Jakari Jackson reporting for the InfoWars Nightly News. Headline, NYPD response to crime call slows to 9 minutes. Now, before we get into this article, I just want to reference something. Many of you know that the new iPhone 5 is out. And we see this article here, the NYPD's response to calls has slowed to 9 minutes. But the NYPD are actually out on iPhone patrols. They're posted up at your local Apple store if you're there in New York. But for some reason, they can't get to normal calls of their citizens right there in their own city. It's just something that seems a little silly to me. We'll get back into the article. Crimes may be near record low levels, but it took cops an average of 9.1 minutes last year to respond to crimes in progress, the NYPD's worst performance since Mary Bloomberg took office in 2002. The NYPD's chief spokesman attributed the latest increase to a spike in non-critical calls that drove up the overall averages, like cell phone patrols. Response times to critical calls such as robberies in progress or a man with a gun remained flat at 4.6 minutes. So we see here that they say for critical crimes, as they deem them, they do stay average at 4.6 minutes. And I know the NYPD, they have, you know, budget cuts like everybody else, and they have horrific traffic up there from what I understand. But 9.1 minutes for things that they don't deem as being that serious is kind of serious to me. Because, you know, I guess a serious crime is if you are in immediate peril. But let's say some guy is running down the street with your TV. That's not critical because you're not in direct danger. So this guy could hop in a cab, hop on a subway, and be gone with your TV. And cops, you know, they come back from the Apple store, and they say, hey, your stuff's gone, so, hey, whatever. So it's just something that they could do better. And police, I'm not, you know, mad against you, but whoever said this iPhone patrol was a good deal was completely ridiculous. Next story. Now, speaking of, you know, keeping yourself safe and what you can do without the police, we have an article here. Mother, daughter, and pink pistol subdue criminal. And this is exactly what I'm talking about. If police can't be there in a decent time to protect you and your property, you should be well able to protect yourself. And, of course, I'm referring to a gun. Mother and daughter pinned a burglar to the floor of their home and called police while keeping a pink stock gun pointed at the intruder until officers arrived. And we actually have a clip of that video, and we'll show that to you now.
He was about right here.
He was Marty Childs, according to police. Rebecca says he had cash from her purse in his hands.
I shut and locked the door, the deadbolt door, so he couldn't get away.
As Rebecca wrestled with Childs, she called for her sleeping daughter to grab her gun.
I actually wasn't nervous. I knew I had to back away from him a bit so he couldn't get to me.
So there we go. We see a mother and daughter fully able to take care of themselves. Had they been in New York, they'd had to wait around for God knows how many minutes for the police to come and get there. But since they took matters into their own hands, not took the law into their own hands, but took matters into their own hands, they had a firearm to defend themselves, and they did a great job. You see, they didn't run out there and shoot up the whole neighborhood trying to hit one guy. They were responsible gun owners. You heard the girl in the clip. She said, hey, she pointed her pistol at the guy. She didn't want to shoot him. She said, as long as he stayed down, it wouldn't be a problem. He stayed down. The police came and arrested the guy. No problem. See, if we could see more things like that where people are able to arm themselves, had this been, you know, the guy killed both of them, got away, it would have been in the news for one day and never heard again. But we see people here taking matters into their own hands and protecting themselves. And why is it always the older people? Because you see here in this clip, this older woman, I think that the article said she was about 56 or so, she wrestles a grown man to the ground, and her daughter comes in and backs her up. You know, we see the older crowd, this lady, and then the gentleman at the casino, the arcade, or wherever he was, and also the older guy who shot the people coming in through his basement. I guess the older people know something that we don't, that you need to stand up and protect yourself. So good for you, ladies, and I hope that you don't have any more problems with that guy. They say he's a former convicted felon, so he's maybe doing a stretch here in the near future. Last story. Arizona immigrants concerned about show me your papers. Yes, they want you to show your papers in Arizona, just much like Nazi Germany or the American South during slavery times. Show me your papers. Show me your freedom papers. Let me know that you are free. So that's what our country has come to in the year of 2012. Let's get into the article. After a legal battle lasting more than 2 years, SB 1070's subsection 2B entered into full force on Tuesday after U.S. District Judge Susan Bolton lifted an injunction she imposed in 2010. Various Arizona law enforcement agencies said that when the law enters into full force, they will not use racial profiling, but activists fear that Hispanics will be discriminated against without regard to their immigration status. You think they're going to be discriminated against? How do you enforce immigration enforcement without racial profiling people. I mean, are they going to pull over, some dark-skinned person with long, dark hair? I mean, that's pretty much what it seems to be to me. And for all you people in Arizona, especially those in Arizona who thinks this is a good idea, yeah, show me your papers, boy. If that's the attitude you have, there's a gentleman who's been on this show many times, Pastor Stephen Anderson, a white guy, a white Baptist male. That's pretty much as white as they get where I come from. And he's been pulled over and forced to show his papers, not in Arizona, but he's been forced to show his papers. So just keep thinking that if you think it's all for those people over there, just like the TSA pat downs at the airport back when they were just harassing the big bushy beard man. Nobody had any problems with it. But then they started filling up little Petey and Susie Q. And now people all up in arms. Oh, the TSA, they're so evil. There's all this and that. And like, yeah, I mean, TSA, they definitely have their problems. And we definitely need to keep working on it if we can't get it at all abolished. But let's at least, you know, keep your hands off the kids. But we have these people having to show your papers. This isn't Nazi Germany. This isn't, you know, you're a free person. You shouldn't have to show your papers. And hey, okay, fine. You do have an immigration problem in Arizona, but this isn't how you're going to solve it, by racially profiling your citizens. But hey, I mean, I'm not trying to encourage anybody to do this, but you know, Arizona, illegal immigrants, if you go to California, your big uncle Barack Obama will give you a free driver's license and a work permit so you can drive to work. And I'm not saying you should do that. I'm just saying this is a situation where one hand's not communicating with the other hand. So you can leave Arizona, go to California, get your driver's license, your work permit, and be set. So, hey, but we definitely have some issues here, and we need to get that settled as quickly as possible. Now for our quote of the day. That rifle on the wall of the laborer's cottage or working class flat is a symbol of democracy. It is our job to see that it stays there. George Orwell. And I don't agree with everything Mr. Orwell says, but that's a very good quote. And you know, I love my guns. I love my freedom. And I'm not telling you to run out and buy a gun, but if you are of sound mind and body and you can ably handle one, hey, there's nothing wrong with that. So anyway, that's it for this segment of the InfoWars Nightly News. We'll be right back with Rob Dew, with his interviews and his special report on Barton Springs. So be sure to stop by the InfoWars shop, pick up some great materials there, books, DVDs, hats, and the like. And also, subscribe to PrisonPlanet.tv. Great stuff there. It supports our broadcast. You help us grow. You help us expand, because people say, hey, can you interview this guy? Can you interview that guy? Can you guys go here? Can you go there? We like to do all that, but we need your support. We are supported by viewers and listeners such as yourself. So stay tuned to that, and we'll be right back with Rob Dew.
Hello, this is Linda West with a special report for InfoWars.com. A new DVD has come out by GMO expert and scholar Jeffrey Smith. It's entitled Genetic Roulette. It exposes the shockingly unbelievable connection between the proliferation of GMOs by huge agri-corporations and the huge increase in disease in America.
Things we're seeing today aren't normal. We didn't see them 30 years ago or 50 years ago.
Illnesses that weren't epidemic before are now epidemic.
With this new comprehensive information, we can finally solve the mystery between the rising disease, cancer, allergies, Alzheimer's, premature aging, and even autism.
I'm concerned about all the health issues that I'm seeing, but the one that I am most alarmed about is autistic spectrum, which is literally skyrocketed.
We can't say for sure that GMOs have anything to do with autism, but we can't say for sure that it doesn't. In fact, there's been an increase in autism since GMOs were introduced, and animals that eat GMOs, both in laboratory and in livestock situations, have shown some telltale signs that some practitioners say are linked with autism.
Jeffrey Smith has done the scientific research that finally reveals the truth about GMOs that big agri-corps and the government has tried so hard to cover up. This food conspiracy is making them billionaires and us sick.
He said he lost about 90% of his miniature steers. What the problem was is, I guess he said that they weren't able to process the food correctly, and they would bloat up and die from it.
Now that we have the real information, we can make changes. Now we know exactly why diseases are on the rise, surgeries are on the rise, and so many small minds are being stolen from autism. I know today we all have a lot on our plate. But what's on our plate today is killing us. This is Linda West wishing your family a happy and healthy future.
Sick of the globalist eugenicist control freaks adding poison to your water and laughing as you get sick and die? Start purifying your water with ProPure. My friends, I've done a lot of research, and the best gravity filter out there, bar none, is ProPure, and it's available discounted at InfoWars.com. Its filters are silver impregnated to prevent bacterial growth. There's no priming required. It's NSF 42 certified. Optional fluoride filters can reduce fluoride up to 95%. Easy to set up and use. Doesn't require electricity. Purify water from lakes, streams, ponds, and wells. This filter system leaves in beneficial minerals, which is key. Save money by not buying bottled water and avoid BPA that leaches from the plastic. ProPure is the best gravity-fed filter out there. It's what my family uses. InfoWars.com already has the lowest price on ProPure. But if you add the promo code WATER at checkout, you get an additional 10% off at InfoWars.com. You can also call to order 888-253-3139. Alex Jones here with a message that could revolutionize health in this country. Going back about a year and a half ago, I began to learn about the incredible health effects of longevity products. Aaron Dykes lost 92 pounds. We're going to show you some before and afters. Aaron, break down what happened, your story.
I've worked really hard with diet and exercise to try to lose weight, but I just didn't get the results. It just didn't happen. Then I saw what you were doing with InfoWarsTeam.com. I wasn't even trying to lose weight, but I got it because I wanted to feel better energy. I wanted that nutrition. Didn't even understand how that could kickstart my own weight loss goals, but the products did that for me. I found myself suddenly losing weight, more energetic, wanting to exercise, wanting to eat the right foods.
And they don't even advertise it as weight loss. I want to challenge our radio listeners to go to InfoWarsTeam.com. Sign up as a distributor and get wholesale pricing discounts at InfoWarsTeam.com.
Welcome back to the InfoWars Nightly News. I'm your host, Rob Due. And thanks to Jakari for doing that last segment there on the, especially I like the pink gun story. Hold them off with the pink. Anyway, we're going to move on to this report we have here. Greedy developers set sights on Austin treasure. This is kind of an ongoing fight that's been going on between people who want to take this amazing pool. Let's roll some of that footage over top of it. Barton Springs, and kind of change it to where, you know, only rich people want to go there, basically gentrify it. Right now, everybody in the world goes to Barton Springs in the summertime. It's about 105 out. The water is in the low 70s. Amazing place. The waters are, I mean, it feels like you're being bathed in the most amazing water. Just swimming there. There's where the salamanders live. They have that roped off. And there's all kind of people who worry about these salamanders, and that's great. That's what environmentalists do. They worry about salamanders. And they have their spot, and we're able to swim with the salamanders, and everything's great, hunky-dory. We can jump off the diving board. Water flows through back out to Barton Creek. There you can see it flowing out. And just on the other side of that, people, you know, play with their dogs and stuff. I mean, this is all footage I shot, basically underwater with the camera. Lots of fish down there, beautiful plant life. They had these little flowers growing off of these plants. I mean, it's just amazing down there. Really is an amazing treasure. Well, the city council, armed, you know, with these architects who want to help beautify it and turn it into this, you know, pristine place where no one has to step on grass or dirt. They can simply walk along the concrete paths that we're going to build everywhere. Well, actually, yeah, let's go to that map first. Right there. That's what they're going to propose to do. They want to beautify all these areas. They want to put some paths in. But what is the real problem with Barton Springs? Let's go to this overhead map here. I'm going to show you. This is what they say the problem is. Along here is this long sidewalk that you saw video of. And basically, It's a giant culvert. And Barton Creek, when it fills up with water, it runs along this culvert so it does not hit the springs and flows out. Because you get a lot of pollution and stuff in that spring area. Well, here's the culvert. This is what it looks like. You can basically fit a man in there very easily. They're saying it's cracked at the bottom. Some of the cracks are up to an inch wide. Oh, I'm sorry. That's an inch. Right there. An inch wide. And they have to do something about it. So what are they proposing? Well, let's go back to the map. They're going to rip up the entire sidewalk there, rip up both dams on either side, and also put these paths in and increase the fence line and do all this other stuff because of some cracks in the culvert. Okay? It's like using a cannon to get a mosquito off your nose. And they have this architect that they already paid over $180,000 to, and she's passed the project on to her buddies, and they're going to get in. It's this big trendy thing they're going to do where we're going to remake Barton Springs, where if you look at this concrete, yes, it's aged, but it's strong concrete. This stuff isn't going anywhere for 50 years, okay? It is hardy stuff. It's when they used to make things to last. Okay, they're going to put something in that'll have to be resurfaced every 2 years and cost $100,000 to upkeep. And then all of a sudden the city's going to go, you know what? We can't handle this. We need to give it to this private developer who just all of a sudden came out of the blue and is able to run Barton Springs. But they're going to jack up the rates from $3 a person to probably $8 a person or maybe even $10 a person. And they're going to charge you to park every time you come in. That's also one of the things. In the back, it's a dirt parking lot. It's nondescript. People like it that way. When you talk to the people of Austin, they like it the way it is. We're not Dallas, okay? We are Austin. We don't mind a little dirt in our hippie shoes. That's the way it is. And so now they want to make this paved parking lot, which is going to trap more heat down there and just make it hotter out there as it is. And they want to put up a better fence that's nicer than the one they have, which is just basically your basic industrial fence with some barbed wire pointing out to keep people out at night. Which, by the way, Barton Springs is a great place to swim at night, even though the water is cold. Man, let me tell you, it is invigorating. So now they want to close it in October 1st. They want to close it and do what they're saying is $2.2 million worth of work. Well, we all know that's going to balloon because they were telling people it's only going to be closed for 9 months. Alex Jones was there talking with the engineers and the developers who were there with hard hats. They say it could take up to 11 months. It could go even longer than that. And it stipulates in their entire process. So they're using this excuse of, well, we've got to fix the culvert to basically change the entire face of Barton Springs to make it more friendlier to people who don't like grass and trees and stuff like that. And you know, have you ever seen a foundation repair to a house? They don't destroy the house in order to rebuild the foundation. They dig up underneath it and do that. And what they're going to do is actually drain Barton Springs to about a foot so they can do all these repairs, and it's going to kill all the wildlife there. It's going to kill the precious salamanders. Okay? Do you hear me, environmentalists? It's going to kill the salamanders because it's going to drain the other pools that are surrounding it where the salamanders actually breed. So this is going to be devastating to the entire ecosystem of that area when they drain this and do all their work. They're going to drain it to about a foot deep. This place is up to like 25 feet in some places. I mean, you dive down and you look up and you're like, wow, there's like several layers of people on top of me. So here's a quick couple of interviews I did while I was out there shooting some video, just asking people what they thought of the repairs, and then we'll come back and just look at the costs.
And how long have you been coming to Barton Springs?
A couple years with my daughter, Kyra.
Cool.
We come down on Saturday mornings and swim. The water's awesome, and the people are cool. We've been down here for a full moon howl. It's a great place. Everybody's always in such a great mood.
Excellent, excellent. Now, did you hear about the closure that they're going to do possibly October 1st?
That's we just recently heard some rumors about that, and I really don't know enough about it, but I kind of like the walkway that's here, the texture of it, and just the character of the whole place. I don't know what they have in mind for modifications, but I really don't see any need for it unless it's falling apart underneath. You know, cosmetically, I don't think it really needs anything. I think the springs are pretty cool the way it is.
If it's something inside of the bypass, it seems like the main way to fix it would be inside of the bypass. I come here a lot, and I can't see any obvious external problems with the sidewalk. Maybe it might be like an aesthetic thing that, you know, oftentimes people will use a necessary construction for like an obvious aesthetic changer. and that could be the case. I'm sure you're familiar with Barton Creek and stuff. You know, a lot of people make up environmental, like, nuisances as a justification for their own development and building.
That was just from a couple of the citizens of Austin that I talked to. I tried to get on camera the head manager there of the Barton Springs pool, and she wouldn't talk. And I was there not last week, week before last. That's when Alex started sniffing out this story. And she wouldn't talk to me on camera because she hadn't been notified yet of when it was really going to close. So that's what your government, local government, thinks of you, Austin. They're going to keep you in the dark and feed you manure. And what's that called, being a mushroom? And so now they've finally come out just this last week. They're saying, oh, we're going to shut it down October 1st. We're going to start. Here, let's go to this overhead right here. They're going to drain it here, this shallow end, and this is the deep end. And they're going to drain this and start repairing and destroying the awesome concrete sidewalk there and put in a new one that'll probably have to be repaired in 5 years or less, I predict. And then they're going to drain the rest of Barton Springs and finish the repair around. They're going to finish, redo the two dams, which are in perfect working order. And they put out this, the Watershed Protection put out this thing here. Here's what it says. Shallow end pool closed October 1st until project's in. Pool closed mid-November until the project's in. The pool should reopen before March 2013. However, the schedule may change due to weather conditions or construction issues. Oh, wow, that's pretty open-ended. Sounds like we got a plan, huh, Austin? We're just going to close down the springs and destroy it. And then when we have construction issues, oh, well, no more Barton Springs. Too bad the developers came and ruined it all. And this was voted on by your city council that also votes to keep fluoride in our water and tells us it's good for our teeth because you got your crackpot mayor sitting there going, well, my data says it's good for me. When I've been to the damn plant, I've seen what they put in our water. It's frickin' poison. Here's a card Alex got from Lori Dries, PhD. She's an ecologist for the city of Austin. She basically said, here's her card. She basically said, when they drain this thing, it's going to kill all the wildlife in there. Nothing's going to survive because it needs that water to live. And then who knows what else they're going to put in through all their construction processes, what kind of contaminants and stuff. So, you know, the Save Our Springs people, while they may not quite understand how Agenda 21 works, they definitely love their Austin pool, their Barton Springs, and they want to see it saved. I would like to encourage now, you know, basically a call to action to everyone in Austin to call the city council and tell them to stop this project. They need to put it to a vote or at least have more public input because they kept this thing under wraps of how they were going to do it. Then they try to spring it on us when nobody's looking because there's not a lot of people there right now. There's a lot of regulars. The regulars are there every day. The regulars swim year-round because it stays the same temperature year-round. But it's not crowded like it is, you know, in the months of August and July. So I'm encouraging everyone to call the city council right now. Let's let them know what they're doing is not right. If they need to fix this culvert, go inside, hire a foundation repair company, a local foundation repair company. We don't need to hire an architecture firm from California or Timbuktu to come in and fix small one-inch cracks that are inside a culvert. Okay? I could probably come up with a plan to fix this thing for a couple $100,000, and I wouldn't even need to close the springs to do it. So that's my spiel on Barton Springs. I hope I did a good job. Alex kind of sprung this on me at the last minute, but I do feel very strong about the springs. It is an amazing place, and I'd hate to see it destroyed by a bunch of bureaucrats with their pie-in-the-sky plans to turn it into a parking lot, essentially. And, you know, in fact, let's take another look at the springs. There it is, good old Barton Springs. We sure are going to miss you when the bureaucrats come in and destroy you. So we're going from local environmental news. Now I want to turn to another subject. We have the upcoming election in November. And I met this lady a couple weeks ago at a cookout. Yes, we still have neighborhood cookouts where I live. And got to know her. She's a libertarian wholeheartedly. She was actually talking about all these issues at the table. And I was kind of shutting up because I usually don't bring that stuff up. And she was just going on about freedom and Constitution and the NDAA. And I'm like, wow, I've never heard anybody talk about the NDAA at, you know, a dinner party, essentially. So I started talking to her. She's like, yeah, I'm actually running for Congress. And her name's Betsy Dewey, and she's running in District 25, which is right outside of Austin. And it's the former district of Lloyd Doggett. And he decided when they started changing up all these districts, they started gerrymandering everything. If you don't know what gerrymandering is, go look it up. It's basically where they turn a district into what looks like a giant monster in order to secure the most votes for, you know, whatever they want. They want it to be Republican, they gear it towards Republican type areas. If they want it to be Democrat, they gear it towards that. But Betsy Dewey is breaking through with the third wall, trying to make it in as a Libertarian. So we now turn to Libertarian candidate for U.S. District 25 in Texas, Betsy Dewey. How are you doing, Betsy?
Great. Thank you so much, Rob.
It's great to have you on. I'm excited to see basically an empowered mother of two going out there and ready to take on the system, because I think that's what we need. We need regular people who aren't lawyers, who aren't multimillionaires, going out there and at least speaking for the regular people. So what got you started in wanting to be a U.S. representative?
Well, it's very simple. It was when the NDAA was passed on New Year's Eve of 2011 with the sections included, the sections 1021 and 1022, which go directly in the face of our Bill of Rights, of our rights as citizens of this country. You have the right to a fair trial, period. And I've been watching our rights just get stripped slowly away. And, you know, I'm old enough now to where I'm willing to go out there and make sure that I'll do whatever I can to maintain liberty and maintain our Constitution for my children and hopefully for my grandchildren and for many generations to come.
Well, that's good. The NDAA is really what got under my nerves, too, especially that Obama signed it on New Year's Eve, kind of under the cloak of darkness when everybody else was out partying. He's out taking away our rights more and more.
Well, and what struck me was that every single person who represents me in Washington, my congressmen, my senators, and my president, all voted for this. And it had been brought to their attention well in advance that these two sections could be interpreted to mean that Americans could be detained indefinitely without a trial. And I've read those sections over and over. And what's so horrible is that they are interpretable. Legislation should be understandable to your average 18-year-old voter. It shouldn't take a lawyer to understand what our laws are. And, you know, it just irritates me so badly when I hear about 900-page documents of a law being placed on our lawmakers' desks 2 hours before they're supposed to vote on it. That's not even sane. So
exactly. And then sometimes there are thousands of pages. They barely have any time to look at it. I think Pelosi, and I think you saw this on your website, we'll know what's in the bill once we vote for it. She famously said over.
And see what's in it. Right.
Right. Exactly. And I mean, it's just, these people don't have our interest in heart. They're insider trading over and over again. They think they're above the law to do this. So it's good to see somebody with some integrity who's already speaking out. You've already, you know, you're an author. You've written a book. Tell us a little bit about your book.
My book is for the 99% of women who give birth in the hospital. I had two home births, and they were two of the most spectacular days of my life. And aside from the home birth, all of the information that I got from my midwives was just the most incredible information. And I realized that I wouldn't be getting this from a doctor. And so I wrote it in a form of a book. It's easy to read. You can get it on Amazon. It's called Birthright. And it is everything that I learned from my midwives about everything from how to give birth naturally a little bit easier. They give you all these tips, cloth diapers, vaccinations, whether or not to circumcise, all these questions that come up that if nobody's informed you about them, you don't know. So that's what my book is about. It's about empowered pregnancy and birth.
There you go. And also about rugged individualism, people who aren't depending on the system to solve every need that they have. And that's one thing I liked about your platform. You want to cut government spending by 50%. You know, you want to do a lot of things. Why don't you go into your platform a little bit?
Well, two main things is definitely cutting spending, and we can talk about that. But then the other one is bringing our Constitution back. To me, that document is the most powerful document that's ever been written in the world. I've pored over it. I've read it. I think every single person should go Google the Bill of Rights and read it. It's only a page long. It's the first 10 amendments that two states would not agree to the Constitution until we knew that we had rights as well as a platform for electing officials and what states' rights were and all that. Those 10 amendments are so powerful. They give us the rights that we have. And right now, if I'm counting right, about 5 of them have been rendered impotent. They're not your right to be free from unwarranted search and seizure. You've given that up when you step into an airport. This wiretapping that's unwarranted. Drone strikes. That doesn't come across as very constitutional to me.
Or how about secret presidential kill lists where they've so far killed at least 2 of U.S. citizens without trial, without even notifying them of any charges? Just boom, death from above. I mean, this isn't the type of government we want.
No, our founding fathers would take those guys out. I mean, this country represents freedom, or at least it did at one point. And we're supposed to have freedom of speech, period. And nobody should be making excuses for our freedom of speech. People say all kinds of stupid stuff. You don't have to listen to it. You choose to be offended. So our freedom of speech, our freedom of the press. What happened? When I was a kid, Walter Cronkite gave the news. And it wasn't an agenda for a party. If you look at the news, the TV news, it's all an agenda for either the Democrats or the Republicans. It's not news. And I know journalists take an oath, kind of like our representatives in Washington do. And their oath is to not be biased and to bring us what's going on. And that's not happening. I don't see that happening. I see it a little bit. I see it with InfoWars, and I appreciate you guys a lot.
Well, that's good, because we're out there trying to fight the fight that nobody, at least the minority of us, the freedom lovers out there, really want to fight. It seems like we're up against a lot of sheep, a lot of people who want to claim, you know, you're conspiracy theorists, because we actually look at both sides of the issue instead of just, you know, taking for granted what the mainstream media says, for instance. But, what I really want to go into, this district, 25, it used to be Lloyd Doggett's pet district out in kind of parts of Austin and then the outlying areas. Austin's a heavily Democrat town. Now they've rearranged the districts. And so what's happening in District 25? And so it's kind of an open race, pretty much. There's no incumbent here to be able to just sit down and sit on a cinder block and say, this is my district.
That's correct. Austin, it doesn't make sense to me that you would chop a city up into 3 pieces and then stick big rural chunks onto those pieces in order to devalue their vote. You know, Austin is a liberal town, but did you know that Austin is the most libertarian city in the country? I've heard that Greater Austin donated more to Ron Paul's campaign than the entire Live Free or Die state of New Hampshire. So it is very liberal, but part of libertarianism is liberal in that we're socially liberal. We don't think we have the right to tell anybody what to do with their body or with their possessions as long as they're not infringing upon the rights of anyone else. So it doesn't surprise me that libertarianism and liberalism are healthy in Austin, but they've chopped it up into 3 pieces. And my district does include the University of Texas, part of West Austin and a little bit of East Austin. There's kind of a finger that runs through Austin, and then it runs from south down in San Marcos, over through Dripping Springs and Johnson. I don't know if it goes as far as, I think Johnson City.
Yeah, we have the map up now. And it doesn't look like it goes all the way to Johnson City, but Lockhart, Gonzales, a lot of Interstate 10.
It goes all the way up to, through the Lake District, through Marble Falls, Lakeway on the west, and ends up just south of Fort Worth. So it's a long, skinny district.
And it's a fairly big district. These are a lot of different population centers in the area. How is your campaign going? Are people receptive to the libertarian message of freedom and prosperity?
Well, everybody I talk to is, I think everybody's libertarian and doesn't know it. I've been doing a lot of educating about what libertarianism is because it's the direct philosophical descendant of what our founding fathers were. We are the direct philosophical descendants of our founding fathers. It's simply, you know, we were breaking free from a tyrannical government. And it seems like that's what we need to do again. So people are very receptive to it if they're willing to get out of their box. And it's the Libertarian Party has something called Project Politically Homeless. You might see a table down on South Congress or something. And it's for people who don't feel like they fit in with the Republican or Democratic Party. And they wonder what they are. And then they realize, oh, I'm a libertarian. So it's amazing. The response that my campaign has had.
That's good. And in reality, there are a lot of different people with a lot of different ideas of how things should be run. And we've been pigeonholed through, you know, the media and just society in general saying you got to be Republican or Democrat. It's the only thing there is. And that's all I was told as I was growing up. And I remember when I started listening to Harry Brown, I said, I'm a libertarian. That's it. And I don't agree with everything they want to do, but I definitely lean more to freedom and prosperity than I do to more wars and more taxes. I mean, that's just it. And you got the war party and the tax party, and then they both like wars and they both like taxes. So
yeah, they really do end up seeming very, very similar when they come down to it.
Yeah. So talk about your opponent. You're going up against a Republican named Roger Williams. He doesn't even live in your district. And how's this work? How's this carpetbaggery work?
Well, it's actually constitutional, so I'm all for it. You know, when our Constitution was written, the guys who were writing it did not agree on everything. They had to compromise in big ways in order to make this Constitution work. And when you read it, you don't agree with everything either. But that doesn't mean that we don't stand by it because we agree with it. So, Constitution, Article 1, Section 2, which describes who can be a congressperson, you simply have to live in your state to represent any district in your state. So he's well within the constitutional bounds to be doing what he's doing. He's chosen a Republican district because he wants to win, and he made a good political move.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess maybe I'll just go run up, go to the panhandle and tell those people how to live their lives, because I'm here in Austin and I know everything.
Right.
I think that's ridiculous, but okay, it is in the Constitution. I guess they were thinking of that for a reason. I tell you what, we're running out of time here. We've had a long show covering a lot of different issues. What most do you want to say to the people out there? Let me give you 3 minutes to just talk to the voters and really kind of crystallize your message, because I would like to see a libertarian win. I'd like to start seeing libertarians winning House districts, and so we could actually start changing the balance of power in this country. So, Betsy Dewey, going for U.S. House District 25, go for it.
Well, I'm thinking about what our children and our grandchildren are going to inherit. And it is mathematically impossible to be borrowing 43 cents of every dollar we dole out. We've become this, I don't even know why China would be continuing to lend us money. We've been downgraded again. We keep printing more money. The liberal media doesn't really talk about it. I mean, why would they? So when you go to the grocery store and you notice that your favorite item is now crazily expensive, it's not because it's necessarily, your dollars are worth so much less. When you go and get your paycheck seems like it's not going to get you enough gas to get to work anymore because your dollars aren't worth as much. Every dollar that's printed and put out into our system makes every dollar you have worth less. And this keeps happening. And it's inflation, it's spending. The Republican Party doesn't really talk about ending the wars, and that's our most expensive item, our most expensive ticket. And then you know, like the idea of welfare, Americans are very big-hearted people and very charitable people. The wealthiest of our nation give so much to our communities, and they'll always do that. That's part of our American spirit. I believe that. And when you tax people too much, because even if we didn't tax people, even if we took taxes away, which is a libertarian philosophy that taxes are actually theft and that they're not constitutional. Well, they are because we've given the Congress the ability to tax. But the idea of taxing like a socialist country to the tune of 50% or something just isn't what that's not freedom. That's slavery, actually. Right now, most people are working 3 to 4 to 5 months a year as a slave because that money goes directly to the government. So what are we looking at handing our children? A completely busted economy, which isn't going to be pretty for anybody. And Americans need to stand up for themselves and for each other on an individual level. We don't need to be looking to the government to hold our hand. That's slavery, too. When somebody keeps lending you money or giving you money, they own you. And I'm fiercely independent. I don't want to take a dollar from anybody. So I'd find a way to make a dollar. I'd go play my fiddle on the street corner if I had to. So I'm so disgusted with the treatment of our Constitution and of our Bill of Rights. Once again, go read the Bill of Rights. You'll be doing yourself a huge favor. And I'm not just going to stand by and watch it happen. So that's why I'm running. And I hope that message resonates with all Americans, but particularly those in District 25 in Texas.
There you go. Well, you know, I'm not sure if I'm in District 25 at this point, but I am in South Austin, so I might be. And if I am, you definitely have my vote because, you know, I like the fact that you're not a politician. You're not a lawyer. You're not coming from this, upper class privileged background. You have a real good head on your shoulders and, you know, you've got your eye on a lot of issues. We didn't even cover them all. You know, we were talking about FEMA camps the other night. You know, you've really, understand what's going on in this country and how the paradigm is shifting. And if we have more people out there getting into politics for those reasons and not just for selfish reasons so they can make more money off the backs of Americans, we would have a better country. So I salute you for taking that stand and going out there and working for the people. So
thank you. Thank you for what you guys are doing.
All right. Well, there you go. That was Betsy Dewey, House District 25 in Texas. She's running. It'll be this election cycle. She's a libertarian. You know, if you haven't gone and seen what her platform is, you can go check it out at votebetsy.com. And it'll take you to, she's got other websites out there and you can go to her Twitter account. You can look at her Facebook. Plenty of ways to keep in touch with her. Get some signs. Go out there. Maybe volunteer for her if you're in her district. And let's see if we could take this district that used to be Lloyd Doggett's and heavily, you know, staunch Democrat. Let's change that. Let's go ahead and put a libertarian in and see what happens, especially, you know, a libertarian mother of two who's very strong and she knows the issues. I've had a good talk with her a couple weeks ago, and she definitely understands what is going on in this country. She's not blind to these issues, and she's not interested in special interests. She's interested in her kids, and that's at the bottom line, that's what we should all be interested in. Earlier tonight, we talked about how, you know, these maniacal green eugenicists are teaching our kids over and over again that it's wrong to be human, that it's wrong to have technology, that it's wrong to be successful. And we have to combat that with truth and love, and that's how we're going to change this thing. And we're not going to stop until we win. And with that, that's our show tonight. I'm Rob Dew. We'll see you next Monday, and we're going to have many more shows. Please consider becoming a member of PrisonPlanet.tv. And thank you for all your support. If you haven't supported us, please do. You get a 15-day free trial, plus one passcode is good for up to 6 computers. So you can give it up to 6 friends. You guys could all get on, watch the nightly news, watch Alex's show, watch the rants, the special reports. It's a great resource. Make use of it while we still have the Internet. Big Sis is already looking at creating an executive order where they can take over the web at any time. Their little cybersecurity bill, which is basically doing the bidding of the giant corporations. So with that, become a member of Prison Planet TV and use your net before you lose it. Thank you.